The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show, I welcome a special guest, Broken Romeo. I'll also cover our NFL preview, the Olympics, top movies at the box office, and much more tonight on Unsigned. Hey, everybody. How's it going out there? Welcome to the Unsigned Show. My name is Ryan. It's Tuesday night. Hopefully, everyone is having a nice week. Hopefully, you had a nice weekend. I've got a great show for you tonight. We've got a great band by the name of Broken Romeo from Tucson, Arizona, coming in just a moment. And a lot of things to cover tonight as well, even after that. So definitely stick around. Our third week in a row of previewing the NFL, two divisions each week. We'll be looking at the NFC and AFC South, the Olympics recap, also the top movies, and of course, probably one of my favorite stories of the week, and that is good old Randy Travis. Yeehaw, baby. You definitely don't want to miss that. But I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, coming to the Unsigned Show this evening, hailing from Tucson, Arizona, it is James from the band Broken Romeo.
How y'all doing?
Hey, James, thanks for coming on, man. Pleasure to have you. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Just chilling.
Good to hear, man.
Getting ready to have a great show.
Right on. I'm looking forward to it. Again, I appreciate you coming on and taking time out of your week to stop in. But I tell you what, man, anytime we have a band on, it's a pretty common question I always like to start off with is how, you and your brother, which I think is an interesting dynamic for a band. How did you guys, obviously you guys probably got started at a very young age, but how did you guys form the band Broken Romeo?
Well, before I answer that question, I do want to apologize. My brother was supposed to be here, but he developed an acute respiratory sexual infection. I'm kidding, of course, but no, he wanted to be here, but he definitely wasn't feeling well, and we have a show this weekend, so I definitely didn't want to spend any amount of time with him in close quarters so that I would get sick. So I apologize that Steve can't be here. So one Turpin will have to be enough. To answer your question, Steve, my brother Steve, and my best friend Ari, who's our bass player, the three of us, we all worked at, which is now a foreign concept, but it was a record company, like a record store called The Warehouse Records. It was a big chain on the West Coast. So we all worked there and met there, and being in a record store, we used to play a lot of music, and this was back several years, so we all had similar tastes in music, and at the time, he's my older brother, so by far he was the cooler brother, and he wanted to have absolutely nothing to do with his younger brother, being me. He thought I was a total wanker, so me and Ari hit it up, and we were good friends, and he was in a U2 cover band, okay? And back then, I was a huge, huge U2 fan. I loved everything U2, and the fact that this guy played bass in a U2 cover band, and he had this huge poofy hair. We used to call him Sib, actually, Sib from the drummer from the band Boston. But he just kind of looked like Adam Clayton back in the day. And so we hit it off and decided we wanted to form a band. And so we recruited my old high school friend Mike to be the drummer, and then my old other high school friend Rob to be the guitar player. And we had our first rehearsal at Rob's house. And after one rehearsal, his parents said, "You're not allowed to be in the band anymore. you can't practice here. You guys are terrible. You can't do anything." So basically, we needed a guitar player, and my brother Steve was a really good guitar player, and so I asked him. I said, "Hey, why don't you come jam with us?" And he's like, "Absolutely no way. I can't even stand you. I don't even want to be in a band with you. You loser." So we took him out and got him drunk and kept trying to talk him into joining the band. And sure enough, finally, we were able to get him to come, you know, grace us with his presence. And the first practice went really well, and he had a good time. And I think after that first practice, we had a couple songs, and you know, and it's been like that ever since.
Very cool. How many beers did it take to get your brother in on the jam session?
It's how many bottles of whiskey did it take, Jack Daniels?
there you go.
Good he plays answer. Better. He's a little more limber when he's had a few shots of Jack.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that. Now, the band name Broken Romeo, how did you guys collaborate on the band name? Was that something you guys fought over as brothers when it came down time to name a band?
You know, we really didn't, and we threw a lot of weird names out. And, you know, back then, we were really big, like, you know, the cult fans and Guns N' Roses and all that. And my brother was in another kind of quasi band that they never actually, I don't think they ever actually played, but it was all in his head. And he had a band called Sticky Nicky back in the day, if that tells you anything. But you know, we threw a bunch of names around, and we just couldn't find any kind of consensus on, you know, some people didn't even care. Well, it doesn't, what the hell's a band name mean? Or, you know, no one cares, blah, blah, blah. So what we did was finally the three of us, Ari, Steve, and I, since we worked at Warehouse, we had this huge book at the front of the store. We used to call it the Music Bible. And basically what it was every published piece of music going back to, like, you know, I don't know, the early 1900s. And literally it was probably, you know, 15 pounds and just this huge book. So if you were looking for a song, you could find it. Well, we started kind of thumbing through that. And sure enough, we stumbled upon this old R&B song from the 50s called Broken Romeo. And as soon as we heard that, we were like, that's the name. And it's stuck with us ever since.
Very cool. I dig that. It's a very good story. Now, you guys have been around, obviously, for a little while as a band, played a lot of live shows. What's your guys' favorite part about playing in front of a live audience?
Well, our favorite part is actually the playing part. The part that we don't like so much is hauling all the gear and setting it up yourself. And you got 15 minutes to get everything set up, and you do a line check real quick, you play, and then you're frantically trying to get all your stuff off so the next band can go through the same routine. You know, and in some ways it's a little bit sad. It didn't used to be like that. It used to be, you know, you'd have two bands or three bands max, and then, you know, that, so you'd have plenty of time to get everything set up. We used to do sound checks. I mean, you don't need to do that anymore nowadays, you know, so that the sound man could get all your levels, because every band's different. Every band's set up differently, you know.
Sure.
Every band uses different amps. Everyone plays at different levels. And you know, basically what it boils down to now, at least if you're not a national act, is you set your stuff up, which is all set to rehearsal levels, you know. And in rehearsal, everyone plays louder, and you frantically try to get some sort of line check just to kind of make sure no one's overloading or anything. And then the sound guy spends the entirety of your set trying to get the sound to sound decent. And by the time you're done, he probably has it right, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the reality nowadays. You know, most shows, they want 5, 6, 7 bands, you know, and they hope every band can bring 25 people, you know. They got to cover the overhead, and which is sad, but that's the reality of playing live. But we love playing live, and we always have. And you know, it's the interaction with the audience, really, and it's always a special feeling to play in front of an audience with your band, your clan, as you will. Answers the question.
Yeah, no, yeah, it definitely does, man. Now, you know, with that experience playing live, you know, the hustle, the bustle, you know, moving the equipment, unloading, packing, and, you know, over and over again, have you run across any, like, you know, interesting, crazy experiences as far as audience members that maybe, you know, playing in these, you know, bars and clubs, you run across anything crazy or see anything crazy at a live show before?
Oh, there's always crazy stuff. But the one thing that's always guaranteed is I don't care how well you dressed and primped and did all, you know, because you got to be a rock star. By the time you get up there and start playing, you're one big sweaty mess. Your shirt's all wrinkled. Your hair looks like a bird's nest and all that. You know, especially in Tucson. You know, it's sure, 100. Man, yeah. It was 110 here today. I mean, the audience was great. I mean, a lot of times you'll have people come up and talk to you, you know, and they don't understand that you're really stressed out trying to get all your gear set up, make sure it works, you know, or you're trying to get your gear cleared off. And of course, everyone wants to come up and talk and, hey, you know, got your CD. It sounds great. And you want to be nice and, hey, that's great. But, you know, at some point you're under the dime and on, you know, right. There's a time crunch and you got to be like, I'll talk to you after the show.
Yeah, let's, clock's ticking. Buy me a beer at the bar.
Let's have a drink. You think I'm sweaty now? Wait till after the show.
Right. No doubt, man. Hey, speaking of live shows, you have a live show coming up. I think you said this weekend, right? What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we do. We're playing with some really good friends of ours, the Jack Rollers. They're up in Phoenix. Matt Lubin, great guy, great guitar player, great band. Another band called Hide Behind, and actually this is a makeup show. We were scheduled to play. It's at a place in Glendale, Arizona, which I don't know if anyone knows where that is, but it's pretty close to where the Arizona Cardinals, my team, plays up in Glendale, and it's at a place called Donna Jean's Libations, and it's this Saturday. It's going to be a great show. We're actually playing a couple surprise songs. We got some Phoenix fans. We haven't been up to Phoenix for a while, but the whole rescheduled show thing, we were scheduled to play up there a couple months ago. And of course now Steve's sick, you know. I got the worst like chest cold and I completely lost my voice. And I had to cancel, and we never cancel shows, or I think I've canceled one other show like in all this time, and of course it happened to hit that day, and I couldn't even talk, so we had to cancel the show. So this is a makeup show for that. So anyone within driving distance, you know, come on down. It's Donna Jean's Libations in Glendale this Saturday, August 18th. Great lineup. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Very cool. Now, a song I'm sure you guys will play at that show this weekend is Mark of Cain. It's also off the album as well. What can you tell me about this song?
Well, we are going to play it. We're going to play it first, and it's kind of the song, at least recently, we used to kind of open the set, and not much to say about the song. It's kind of a one-off for us. You know, I would say it leans a little more towards the alternative category, but it was one of the later songs that actually made it onto the album, Desperation Days, and we were just thrilled with the way it turned out. Matter of fact, it opens the album after the musical. We wrote this whole musical introduction to Mark of Cain, and it's always a shame because we love playing that song with the intro too. But it's a great song. We hope you like it, and it's off our album, Desperation Days.
Well, here's Mark of Cain here on Unsigned.
I was crazy and alive.
Broken Romeo, Mark of Cain here on the Unsigned Show. I'm hanging out with James from the band Broken Romeo. Hey, really good tune, man. I really dig it. Now, we're going to get more off this album a little bit later, but I got to ask, if you guys, you've been a band for a while. You guys made obviously a lot of great music. If you could put together a tour of any bands with you guys playing on that bill, what bands would you guys like to play with live?
I can't speak for the other guys. Well, I probably could, but they probably wouldn't agree. I've been always a huge U2 fan, and my brother Steve and I, my dad was an officer in the Army, so I was actually born in Germany back in the 70s. And my brother Steve and I are huge Queen fans. I mean, to me, they were always like the ultimate rock band. Freddie was always the ultimate showman, and Brian, just an awesome guitarist. As a matter of fact, my brother Steve and I got to meet Brian May and spend a little bit of time with him before one of their shows in L.A. My brother Steve and I are huge Muse fans. I know Ari, our bass player Ari, has this dream of playing with Alice in Chains. We're huge Alice in Chains fans too, and I got to see them with Lane and their new singer, and they're just a great band. But obviously, if I had to pick one band that I could play with, in this fantasy land, I would say I would love to play with Queen with Freddie. That would have been just. I would just love to sing Queen with Freddie because I never got to do right. that. But if I had any band, that's what I would say.
Stadium tour with Queen, good pick. Now, awesome. The album Desperation Days, you guys released this, what I think, last October, right?
Yep, October 18th, 2011.
Okay, now, the album's been out for a little while. I mean, tell me about, the writing process up to completing this album. How do you guys go about that process in general when creating a full album?
Well, it was kind of an interesting process. We parted ways with our drummer back in, I think it was 2010. So a few of those songs were some of them we'd kind of worked on with him. A lot of the songs were worked on with Ari, Steve, and myself in demos. We have a recording studio ourselves that we kind of, use for demos and this and that. And so some of the songs were written for that. And then some of the songs were added after we added our new drummer. Every album is different. And in a lot of ways, this was kind of a hard album to make because, we as a band weren't sure because we've been around for a while. And, we're all married. We have kids, young kids. We all have day jobs, it's a necessity. I do live in a palace though. I'm just kidding. And so we were, and everyone was kind of pulling in different directions and we were trying to look for a reason to kind of keep doing this because, I don't know if you guys are married or not, but once women love dating guys in bands, but they sure do hate marrying guys in bands. and there's a lot of so you got to kind of like your time allocation starts shrinking, and you really got to focus on what it is you're going to do in life, and then if you're going to be in a band, if you want to be a good band. It takes a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of practice, a lot of trial and error. And we'd gotten to a point, quite frankly, where we were all pretty frustrated, kind of burnout. Steve was doing some things on his own. I was doing some things on my own. And the economy was crap, and all our friends were all losing their jobs and our friends were all getting divorced. And, when you get a little bit older, all the problems that you hear about when you're younger, you start realizing that, those are real and your friends are all dealing with it. So when we recorded this album and we weren't even sure we were going to make the album, but we, we kind of got over it, and as a band decided, yes, we are going to make this album. We're going to throw all our energy into it and do it. And it's got to be something, it's got to be good enough so that we keep the band going. If it's not good enough, then there's no point. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of why we called the album Desperation Days, because in a lot of ways it was a microcosm of the band, right? Because the band was definitely in desperation days at the time. And also we were basically trying to tell all these stories of just all our friends going through all this crap, you know. This guy's got a drinking problem. This guy's getting divorced. You know, this guy just lost his job. This guy just got shipped off, you know, for his third tour, and he's got to leave his wife and his two new kids. And so when I say it was a difficult album to make, I do mean that. And in a lot of ways, it was disjointed. It was a disjointed album. We recorded part of it at a recording studio. We recorded a lot of the guitars at our studio. And it basically took, you know, on and off in the summer of 2011. And that's why I really credit Nando Rivas. He's the guy that co-produced the album. He recorded the album at OG7 Studios. Because we literally didn't know what we were going to get. So basically the way Nando works, and this is different for us too, is, you know, usually when we mix an album, the band's in there too. And he didn't want any of that. He said, give me your ideas, tell me what you want, but I'm going to mix the album. And we were like, what? That's weird. You know, we want to hear it. We want this, that, and the other thing. But we trusted him.
Sure.
But like I said, we didn't know what we were going to get. And
what?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, the album, I mean, definitely came off. I mean, I remember when you sent it to me, you know, we were talking here and we're going to hear another cut from the album Coming Home. But I remember when you sent it to me, I was like, you know, on the show, we do two or three songs and you were like, pick a third song. And I'm listening to it. And I listened to it. And I was sitting there listening with my wife and I was like, man, I was like, these guys we're going to have on, you know, in about a month or so. And she's like, they're pretty good. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I'm having a hard time picking the third song. And I'm a married guy. You know, Mike's a married guy. And, you know, I totally get where you're coming from there, too. I mean, it's hard to, you know, stop and smell the roses, for lack of a better term, in life sometimes when reality gets up in your face and says, hey, man, the rent is due. You know, so, I mean, I understand, you know, I think everybody can relate to what you guys are going through. I think a lot of people in the country, you know, not to get like into a big political tangent, but I mean, even still, you know, you said the economy was, but I think it still is. And we're still like in an influx right now, an election year, and there's a lot of stuff going on. People are struggling all over the country, you know, and it's
kind
of
ironic. That, too.
Yeah, I agree, man. Yeah. It's kind of ironic that this next song, I think Coming Home is the next track here tonight. I mean, I think it kind of fits, at least in my opinion, it kind of fits to what we're kind of talking about and kind of really ties in with the album, again, Desperation Days. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's funny because that song in particular is, a lot of people ask me, well, are you in the service? And I said, no, I'm not. I'm not. My dad, you know, my dad was an officer in the Army, and I can barely remember, but I know that he had to go to Vietnam when we were tiny little tykes. We know some friends and especially in particular a guy that, you know, had to go off to tour duty and he just had he had some young kids and so basically I just tried to think, well, God, what if I had to do that? You know, I just had my son, you know, he had just been born when that song was actually written, at least the lyrics. And I was like, wow, you know, that would be hard to do. Always wondering whether you're ever going to see him or, you know, you're going to be able to teach him all the things. You know, your dad hopefully teaches you what it's all about being a man, being responsible, you know, and what if you were off and, you know, every day you're worried about, you know, I got to make it home. I've got these young kids, you know. I mean, even like that, the shooting in Aurora, I mean, there's, you know, stuff like that. You never know, you know.
You never know.
You can drive. You're driving to work, and you're not paying attention, and you're done. You know, and who's going to take care of your kids, and who's going to take care of your wife? And I was a little self-conscious about writing that song, to be honest, because I knew exactly that I was going to get people to say, "Well, you haven't been there. You haven't done that. What do you, you know, blah blah." Well, and I can relate. I understand that. I know I haven't been there. I haven't. And a good friend of ours and a guy that came and saw us play, this is his favorite song. Well, you know what? He's a Marine. He's been there. He's done it. And I told him, I said, hey, I said, I haven't been there. I hope that doesn't offend you. He goes, no. He says, it doesn't offend me at all. He says, you get it. He says, you don't have to be there to get it. You get it. And it's his favorite song. So every time he comes, we play it live for him. But I love the song as well.
Cool. Wait. No more introduction there. It's Coming Home here by Broken Romeo on Unsigned. We'll be right back.
fought until the end, and I fell here with my friends. I'm not coming home.
Broken Romeo with Coming Home here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan, and hanging out with James from Broken Romeo. Really good track, man. I think it definitely tied in what we were talking about prior to this song coming on. I couldn't have said it better ourselves, I don't think, right there. Now, I know you mentioned off air before we went live that you're a big Arizona Cardinals fan. You've been season ticket holder for a long, long time. Where do you see your Arizona Cardinals this season? How do you think they fit in the out in the West in the AFC?
Oh, man.
Or excuse me, in the NFC.
NFC West. I'm a big Cardinals fan. My wife and I actually went to the Super Bowl to see them lose to the Steelers in the last 2 minutes. But it was a great experience. Sorry. I figured I may never see him again in the Super Bowl, so I went. I don't know. I think it all starts at the top, right? You know, who's going to be the quarterback? And right now, Cobb hasn't shown much, and Skelton has shown some, but you know, they paid Cobb all that money and gave up so much to get him that you just, you know, as a fan, I just hoping and praying that the light turns on and we can get some use out of him. He's going to have to light it up or he'll be gone next year. And, you know, it's hard to win in the NFL without a quarterback. And that's why I was really hoping we'd get Peyton Manning, you know, back in the...
Sure, yeah.
But you know, the defense had a great second half of the season. You know, they went 7-2 to end the season last year, and they beat some really good teams, including the 49ers. I don't know. I'm you know... What's their window? You know, they could win 5 or 6 games, or they could win 9 or 10 games. I just don't know this year, guys.
Right on. No, they're actually a team we're going to be covering next week in our NFL preview, so I don't want to give too much away, but I feel your pain about losing the Steelers. I'm a Browns fan, so we've done our fair share of that in the last dozen years or so. I was definitely pulling for you guys in the Super Bowl several years ago against Pittsburgh because I can't stand Pittsburgh. There's nothing about me that likes Pittsburgh. I don't even like to drive through Pittsburgh. That's how much I don't like Pittsburgh. So, you know, hopefully you guys have a good season. I hate to tell you this, but Kevin Cobb reminds me so much of Tim Couch. I know you probably cringe when I say that, but I hope that's not the case. But he really does remind me a lot of Tim Couch when he came out of Kentucky. And obviously Tim Couch had to play right away where Cobb got to set a year or so. But I mean, body frame, style, type of play, they remind me a lot. They played in the same type of system in college together, too. It scares me to say that to you, but hopefully he turns it around. I think he's a system guy, so they've got weapons there with Fitzgerald and company. So hopefully you guys, you know, can at least challenge for the division.
Beanie Wells. San Francisco, they're going to need a lot of Beanie Wells and Ryan Williams. They're going to need to be able to run the ball, and play good defense. And then, you know, hopefully the quarterback situation will sort itself out. Yeah, you can throw the ball to Fitz if he's single covered, which he rarely is. But you know, there's going to be some open wide receivers. You know, if you can run the ball and with Fitz there, you're going to have someone to throw the ball to. But then it boils down to the line to protect him. The problem with Cobb is really he can't stay in the pocket. Right, he's too quick to bolt, and he's always bolting to the right side. And of course, the defense knows that. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll have a better show on this Friday night against the Raiders. So
there you go, man. Well, best of luck to the Cardinals. But kind of wrapping things up here tonight. Now, I mean, you know, you guys have a show this weekend. Now, if people want to, you know, get more about the band, find more about you guys, hear more of your music, you know, what's that website, Twitter, those type of things you want to throw out that people can get a hold of you guys?
Sure. The easiest way, if you don't have a pen and paper to write this down, is just go to Google and Google Broken Romeo, and you'll see everything there. But we do have our website, brokenromeo.com. If you're interested in buying our CD, we made it really easy. Just go to desperationdaze.com, Daze being D-A-Z-E. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Our Twitter is at Broken Romeo. Reverb Nation. We're pretty much everywhere there is that you can be. SoundCloud, you can actually listen to our entire album. We're on iTunes, Amazon, pretty much everything. I do want to take a second. I just saw that someone was on. I want to just say hi to Victoria. Victoria, I'm glad you're listening, and I'm glad you said you're going to go get the CD now, so I'm going to hold you to it.
Right on. Well, Victoria, thanks for tuning in tonight. James, hey, pleasure having you, man. Stop by any time. If you guys ever have a new project or anything, definitely keep us in mind, man. We'd love to have you. Hopefully your brother Steve is feeling better for the weekend gig. And that we leave you tonight with a song that I really like. I think one of the singles off the album, One in a Million. What can you tell me about this song?
That was the last song to make the album, the newest song to make the album. And we'd only been working on it for a few weeks, prior to recording it. So that song actually was almost constructed in the studio. I mean, we had the bones were there, but, we'd never played that song live. And the song One in a Million is really about someone that realizes they're an addict to, doesn't matter what, it could be alcohol, it could be drugs, it could be a person. And it's kind of coming to that, you're in that gray area where you kind of realize, I might have a problem, but I'm not quite ready to cut ties yet, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
No. So the problem hasn't gotten to a point where it's ruining your life. It's almost like you're in that, like I said, that gray area. I love that song. It's one of my favorites off the album. And before we leave, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I apologize again for Steve, and it's been a great time, and much luck to you guys as well in the future.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it. And thanks for stopping in. And hey, anytime, man, this show was founded, years ago on giving a platform for people to, talk about music and sports and have their voice be heard, and appreciate you coming on and doing just that. And we leave you tonight. James, again, thank you very much. This is Broken Romeo, One in a Million here on Unsigned. One in a Million by Broken Romeo. And again, thank you to James from Broken Romeo for stopping in tonight and, you know, give us the opportunity to talk with him, talk about a lot of different things about the band, how they got started and everything. Really appreciate it, James. Best of luck. You guys definitely stay in touch. And we've got a lot of other things to cover tonight on the show, and that is the London Olympics. The Olympic Games ended this past weekend, and a couple things I want to cover, and we'll talk about the closing Olympics and, you know, the really the big winners and the most popular athletes coming out of the 2012 London Games. Women's boxing, the first time ever that women's boxing has been the Olympics, and really a great story from the small town of Flint, Michigan. Clarissa Shields, this young lady at the age of 17, became the very first American woman to win gold in boxing in her weight class. She was clearly stronger, faster, and really top-notch above all other women in her division. And it's really a great story about her community and really tied around her. Everyone got together, her classmates, they all pitched in money, did fundraising events to send her to the London Games. It's a good feel-good story. Things that, you know, I love doing. If you're a fan of the show and you've been listening to the show for a while, you know I love feel-good stories. There's enough garbage out there. This is a great feel-good story. 17-year-old girl being the very first, part of the first women to compete in the Olympics in the sport of boxing, and then to win it, a gold medal. Not only was it great for her, it's great for, you know, Team USA, but it's also great for her community in Flint, Michigan, that banded together and did it, you know, basically sacrifice for her to go win it. And you got to like that type of commitment to a young person at the age of 17. There's no doubt in my mind she will be at the Reading Olympics in 4 years. Men's wrestling. Now, the U.S. did not medal in Greco-Roman wrestling, no surprise there, but they did take home gold in the 96-gram division. Jake Verner won gold, and also in the 74-kilogram division freestyle, Jordan Burroughs also took gold for the United States. Now, here's a bonehead move here. Judo, Nick DiPaolo, he was expelled from the Olympics for doping this past Monday, saying he unintentionally ate some pot brownies. Whoops. Are those pot brownies, man? You got any milk? Oh, dude, I got a judo event going on, man. Dude, he was like in slow motion judo. Like, I wonder if he was doing like the mouth movements like they did in the old kung fu movies and stuff. Like, I am Nick DiPaolo. I am on pot brownies. I will take you down with judo. Anyway, he did finish seventh. Maybe if he wouldn't ate so many pot brownies, he might have medaled. Who knows? Women's basketball. I tell you what, the women's basketball, the men's basketball dominated the headlines, but I tell you what, the women's basketball, you want to talk about dominance in basketball? The Team USA for women's basketball, they won their fifth straight gold medal at the Olympics, and they have now posted, in that time frame, in the last five Olympics, they have posted a 41-0 record. They haven't been beaten. Five gold medals. That is dominance, and I don't see any end in sight. I expect them to go for a sixth straight gold medal in Rio in 2016. And of course, men's basketball, at times they look dominant. We didn't talk a whole lot about them because there's so many other sports going on. We talk about the NBA quite a bit, but they got tested against Spain. Everybody knew that they would, but the perimeter of LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, shooting the three-pointer like he did, you know, Chris Paul and company, and yeah, Kobe Bryant's on that team too. Just too much firepower. When those guys got rolling, it was just too much. But I think the talk about these guys being better than the 92 Dream Team, I think that destroyed that idea. Yeah, the competition is a little bit better, but I still think that 92 Dream Team still dominates even today. And I think Larry Bird said it best, says they better be able to beat us. We're 20 years older. Larry Bird, he knows that. I think a lot of those guys, I mean, 11 Hall of Famers on that team and 26 championship rings. Come on. That 92 Dream Team was unbelievable, and it'll never be another like it. This team was good. Don't get me wrong. Kobe, LeBron, Durant, you know, Carmelo Anthony, Chris Paul, you know, Darren Williams, the list goes on. A lot of really, really good players. Don't get me wrong. For this time, for this day and age, they are the best basketball team right now as far as international teams are concerned. But Spain, Argentina, it was sad to see them lose the bronze medal game. That team is old. I don't expect them to be the same team they have been the last 10 to 12 years. A lot of those guys are getting older, and I don't think they're going to be the same team they were 10 years ago going into the next Olympics in Rio. Women's soccer, Team USA, I tell you what a great story. They get redemption against Japan from their loss in the World Cup in 2011. They win the gold medal in London, and I tell you what, it was a very, very good contest. Well-played soccer, the defense from the USA, and the goalkeeping of Hope Solo was the difference. She was outstanding, and I mean outstanding. in the gold medal game goalkeeping. She had some amazing stops, played her heart out. Team USA, they win the gold, their third in a row, and I expect this team to hold together, stay together, and I expect them to contend again in 2016 for another gold medal. And really, the winner of the Olympics, and I think not only is the fans who got to watch this gentleman and hear his interviews and to watch him run, is Usain Bolt. This guy was unbelievable, winning a third gold medal in the 4x100 relay, helping the Jamaicans crush the world record. Usain Bolt, a true legend in racing, and honestly, I think he transcends worldwide. I dare put him in the class as Muhammad Ali. Yes, I went there. I truly believe that. Usain Bolt is just something about the guy. He's contagious. I mean, this guy's down there. He's talking with the timekeeper. He's talking with the people who hand the batons for the relay. I mean, he's just, you know, soaking it all in. It's beautiful to see and tremendous to watch a guy run. I mean, when he ran the 200 meters, he actually held up. This guy ran 200 meters, which is about 120 yards in 19.3 seconds. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And he said he's going to come to Rio and try to be the only person ever to win the 100 meter and the 200 meter back to back three times. Now that is going to be must see TV, I tell you that. Now the London Games, you know, it was amazing. I think, in my opinion, the London Games have really been the best Olympics I can remember in a long, long time. And it's with, in today's world with social media and the people tweeting, hey, I'm on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned, check me out on Twitter, please. Over 150 million tweets, and credit our producer Mike for giving me this article here. Over 150 million tweets at the Olympics over the past 16 days. They take a look at it. It's big, massive conversations. It's actually broke down into tweets per minute. And here are some of the most popular athletes. And of course, Usain Bolt leads the tweets per minute at 80,000 tweets per minute during his 200-meter sprint. And during his 100-meter sprint, he's number two on the list at 74,000 tweets per minute. Number three is Andy Murray, winning gold medal for Great Britain in tennis, 57,000 tweets per minute. Jamaica, again, featuring Usain Bolt on that list again, 52,000 tweets per minute. Team USA beating Spain for the gold medal, which was a very competitive basketball game, 41,000 tweets per minute. The top 10 athletes per Twitter during the Olympics, LeBron James is number 10. Now, how much does LeBron James dominate ESPN and CBS News during the NBA season? During the Olympics, he's number 10. Johan Blake from Jamaica, the runner, is at number 8. Kobe Bryant at number 7. Andy Murray, the tennis player, at number 6. Gabby Douglas, number 5. Ryan Lochte at number 4. Tom Daley at number 3. Michael Phelps, number 2, who's won more medals than anybody in the Olympics, is number 2. Number 1, you guessed it, at Usain Bolt. I'm telling you, he transcends worldwide, no matter what country you're from. How can you not be a fan? The man is an amazing athlete. His size and speed and just overall personality is charismatic. Like I said, I put him right in, not quite, but he's very, very close to that Muhammad Ali area where he's definitely going to go down as being very remembered. Now, translating into that, now we look at the closing ceremonies of the Olympics. Now, I talked a couple weeks ago about the opening ceremonies. Now let's talk about closing ceremonies. It was really a musical melody montage of Great Britain artists. You had the Beatles, you had Pink Floyd, you had The Who, you had Annie Lennox, who came out in like the steampunk goth scene. We'll just call that Annie Lennox Ghost Ship Experience. I don't know why. It was very, very odd to me. Make whatever sense of you would like there. And then at that point, you had Fatboy Slim come out and DJ on an inflatable octopus. I don't know if that's a double entendre for something. It could be. I don't know. They did leave out Duran Duran. I later found out Duran Duran was actually in Arizona. And Def Leppard, not a part of the events either. But they found a way to sneak in the Spice Girls and Russell Brand singing the Beatles' I Am the Walrus. Yeah. Russell Brand. Yeah, you heard me right. Russell Brand singing I Am the Walrus. Now, look, I'm sorry, but I can't be the only person that finds Russell Brand a complete cock-up. He wants you to believe that he is off his trolley, that he's full of piss all the time. This bugger is better known as a pavement pizza. I mean, really, this Nancy boy is about as funny as being poked in the eye with a hot iron after an all-night bender at the Purple Onion. Russell Brand is, I'm sorry, he needs to get off his bike, right? I mean, he's Russell brand me this old chap, mate fish and chips and Katy Perry's knockers on Sesame Street. This bloody wanker has the comedic genius of Russell Stover's chocolate candy being left out on a hot summer's day. I'm serious. I get brassed off every time I see this louse on TV. It makes me lurgy. It's just him going on about something. No one can understand what you're saying, Russell Brand. It's rubbish. I say, hey, I'm Russell Brand. I'm the bloody wanker from the UK who's a useless knob nitwit who bobs on your uncle. Yeah, you may come off. I may come off as I'm a throb and a wobble. Well, I say bollocks. Bollocks, I say. Piss off, Russell Brand, you waffle. I wouldn't give a Mickey on you if you were on fire. Get stuffed, grub on that, cheese off and a plate of fish chips and a bowl of tartar sauce, and I'll put paid to this rant and say jolly good. Smashing, really, Russell Brand. Build up. I'm done. You know what? Let's go ahead and head off the path tonight. That was kind of our segue into off the path. That was one of my a little rant there on Russell Brand. I'm sorry, I just don't find the guy funny. Yeah, good day. Off the path tonight. Hey, anyone remember the band Creed from the late 90s, early 2000s? You know, I was thinking to myself the other day, I could really, you know, go for a book from the singer Scott Stapp. I'd really like to hear what his memoirs are like. And bang, I pull up Rolling Stones today, and sure enough, there it is. He has a tell-all memoir of Scott Stapp's titled Sinners, Creed, devolving into his suicide attempts and battles with alcoholism and reveling details of his abusive childhood. Also, just in time, the new Creed album is coming out this coming October, titled Sinners. Apparently, Scott Stapp has found God, and he's going to tell us all about it. That's exciting. Hey, moving on, we have Les Claypool, who's better known for his work as the singer and bassist for the band Primus, but he also has another good cause going on right now. This is for his two-year-old nephew, Matthew, who is battling leukemia. Starting today, Les Claypool is auctioning off his prototype bass. He's been playing in concert for the past year or so, using proceeds to help pay for Matthew's mounting medical costs. These expenses are insane, Claypool tells Rolling Stone. He says, I remember we went and had a couple shots. When he first got a diagnosis, they were $80,000 a piece. We don't need health care reform or anything like that, $80,000 a piece for a couple shots. Primus has been playing at benefit shows and raising money for Matthew. Claypool figured out that he would attract more attention by auctioning his very high-end, very expensive prototype bass that he designed to his specifications. The four-string bassless Claypool has designed as a walnut top with a maple back with LED lights on the neck. It is the most comfortable playing four-string bass I've ever played in my entire life, Les Claypool says. Now, Primus also recently announced they're going to be doing a fall tour featuring 3D enhanced stage shows and a four-way surround system. That sounds like a lot of fun. The tour is going to begin October 12th, which coincidentally enough should be around the same time that Matthew should be getting out of the hospital and finally coming home after his battle with leukemia. So, kudos to Les Claypool, and also keep an eye out for a Primus sailing the seas of cheese in a town near you. The Beastie Boys, Adam Yauch. Now, we weren't on the air at the time when Adam Yauch passed away this past April. Adam Yauch, if you're not familiar, was one of the founding members of the Beastie Boys, one of the greatest musical groups, in my opinion, in the last 30 years. He actually prohibited, in his will last week, prohibited the use of his music or artistic property to ever be used in advertising at all, even after his death. This was filed again last Tuesday, notwithstanding anything to the contrary. There is no event that may image or use my name in any of my music or any artistic property created to be used for advertising purposes. That is from the Beastie Boys, Adam Yauch's withstanding will that he wants none of his music to be used for advertising purposes. In a day where, you know, people were just, you know, selling their songs for, you know, to sell cheeseburgers, you gotta commend the guy for that. Now, here's the bonehead of the week right here. Randy Travis. Now, you may not be familiar with Randy Travis. He is a country singer who allegedly walked in naked to a Tiger Mart in North Texas last Tuesday night, demanding cigarettes, and then left in frustration shortly before he was arrested on the side of the road, a suspicion of DWI. When authorities arrived, the scene grew stranger when the 53-year-old Travis was naked, bruised, reeking of alcohol, and apparently ran his Pontiac Trans Am off the road into construction barricade, scattering the cones all over the place. Now, I don't know what I find more funny about this, the fact that he went in naked to a Tiger Mart to buy cigarettes, or the fact that he was driving around a Pontiac Trans Am naked. Really extraordinary stuff. Now, Travis was arrested again while driving intoxicated. He said he threatened to shoot and kill the officers in the case. This is on the case results. The sheriff's office reported in a statement that he refused to take a breathalyzer test. They ended up later taking a blood sample. And I could just imagine what Randy Travis's next album is going to be about. And I actually took the liberty of writing the first part of his new hit single. It's I'll do my best country here for you this evening. This is a debut. Mike, this is my country debut of Randy Travis's new single. I want naming rights on this if this comes out.
Will do, man. I'm excited about this.
I went into Tiger Mart to buy some cigarettes. I was naked, broke, and drunk as a man could get. I left in my birthday suit and climbed in my Pontiac. I fired up my Firebird, then soon would be regret. I was face down, naked, drunk as one could get. I told the cops I'd kill them, and I want some cigarettes. That booked me on DWI, not one of my best. My bugshot shows a black eye. I wonder how I'd get. I went on to the Tiger Mart to get some cigarettes. Broke, drunk, and naked as a man could get. Yeah, there you go. Randy Travis, from me to you, buddy. New hit single right there. You put that on every modern hit country station and people will be eating up Drunk Tiger Mart. I'm telling you, you title that song Drunk Tiger Mart and people will spoon feed it right in their gullet. I'm telling you, they will. Top movies at the box office this weekend, starting from number 10, working our way up to number one. We have the movie The Watch, 2.2 million. Step Up Revolution. It's amazing that that movie is slipping out of the top 10 faster than anything. It's stepping down at 2.8 million. The movie Ted at 3.2 million. Ice Age, Continental Drift, 6.3 million. Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Dog Days, $8 million. The remake of the 1990 classic, Total Recall, at $8 million. Hope Springs, $14.6 million. The Dark Knight Rises at $18.9 million. Number two, The Campaign, which looks hilarious, with Will Ferrell, $26.5 million. And The Bourne Legacy at $38.1 million. Those are your top movies at the box office this weekend. And now it is time for NFL preview. We're doing two divisions for 4 weeks. Now, tonight we're going to do the NFC and NFC, AFC and NFC South.
False start, offense. Everyone but the center.
You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Congratulations. See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
There you go. Our NFL preview starts. And let's start no better place than the AFC South. Last year's winner was the Houston Texans, the best season in franchise history since coming into the league. Now, they lost a lot of pieces on defense and also the offensive line. Now, I still think this team is loaded with big-time talent. The big question, I think, with Houston Texans is, can they stay healthy? In recent years, they haven't been able to. Arian Foster was hobbled last year with some injuries. Andre Johnson's been banged up the last season or two. Matt Schaub, can he stay on the field? He hasn't been able to stay on the field the whole season the last couple of years he's been there, also in the last year of his contract. On defense, they lose Mario Williams. They also end up trading DeMeco Ryans. They still have a lot of talent under Wade Phillips' 3-4 scheme. But I think quarterback play is going to be crucial. Matt Schaub has to stay upright, has to stay healthy and play a full 16 games. But also, I think this defense, they are going to get the quarterback. They are going to blitz. They're going to hound you. They're coming. They're pinning their ears back and they are coming. It's Wade Phillips' 3-4 defense. They're bringing the heat. They're going to create pressure. They're going to create turnovers. They have a lot of young talent and a very winnable division, the AFC South. I think they cruise to an 11-5 record and I expect them to make a deep push into the playoffs in the AFC. Next up, the Tennessee Titans. Now, I live in the Nashville area. I hear a lot about this team, more than I'd care to be honest with you. But the expectations are always very high at the beginning of the season in Nashville, and then the season starts and the expectations go back to where they should be. Look, this club, they're very well ran. It's a nice organization. They have a solid coaching staff in place. But this team is just kind of – they're just kind of muddling around 500 for the last couple of years, and I really don't see them – I don't know. Maybe there's something on, that roster that says, yep, they're really going to make a jump this year. I see this team at 500, 9-7 maximum. The running back situation, Chris Johnson, they paid Chris Johnson all this money last season, over $10 million. He had an okay season, rush for over 1,000 yards. But, I mean, you're paying a running back $10 million. You want him rushing more than 1,000 yards. He did not look good last year. They just announced Jake Locker is going to start the next preseason game. Is that a prerequisite for the regular season? I don't know. They still have Matt Hasselbeck there. Can he stay healthy if he is the starter for a full season? I have my doubts on that as well. Hasselbeck has played a lot of football. His best years are definitely behind him. I mean, does Locker end up being, you know, being the guy? I think he is. I mean, they got to find out. He sat last year. They picked him number 7 in the draft 2 seasons ago. I think you got to find out what Jake Locker can do. I think he's a talented guy. I mean, does he put them over the edge in this division to beat the Houston Texans? I doubt it, at least not this year anyway. Again, I think this team is 500. They lose. They have questions in the secondary. Can they rush the passer? They lose Cortland Finnegan to the St. Louis Rams via free agency. I just don't know if this team has enough. I think they max out at 9-7, and that is max out. And the rest of this division is in shambles. I mean, you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Indianapolis Colts. The Jacksonville Jaguars are a one-man show. Maurice Jones-Drew, who's actually in contracts dispute right now, so they don't know if he's actually going to be there or not. You have Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. Is he really the guy? Is he really not the guy? They brought in Justin Blackmon via the draft from Oklahoma State, who got arrested for DUI in the offseason before he ever played a down of football in the NFL. He's going to fit right in, obviously, in the NFL. I don't know if he's the real deal or not. I mean, he's a, you know, tremendously gifted, athletic person. But does this team really have enough? I don't know. I think at best case scenario, 6-10. Maybe Gabbert shows progress, but they have a lot of questions to answer in Jacksonville. And then you look at the Indianapolis Colts. They get rid of Peyton Manning, who looks good, by the way. We'll talk about him next week. But you look, you know, the Andrew Luck. Look, it's one preseason game. Everybody on ESPN's going, oh, man, well, Peyton Manning threw a touchdown in his first preseason game. So Andrew Luck, you know, he's right on pace with Peyton Manning. Look, the guy threw a 3-yard screen pass, and the running back took it 80 yards for a touchdown. That's exactly what happened. Let's not put Andrew Luck in the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? Even Colt McCoy looked good in the preseason last year. So this Colts team, they're in a rebuilding mode on both sides of the football. They had an awful, awful year last year. Again, this defense, they're not very good. They have some nice weapons, some nice pieces. The offensive line is question marks. Is Donald Brown really the answer at running back? Andrew Luck, I think, will be good. I think it's going to be a very tough season for them. I think 4-12, best case scenario, but the future is full of Luck, right? Now let's look at the good old NFC South. And look no further. It's been a very tough offseason for the New Orleans Saints. Houday and the Bounty Saints. Houday and the Bounty Saints. Look, their coach is gone. Their GM is gone. They got Drew Brees. They signed into that big deal, which I think is crucial. They have a pretty talented defense. They really do. Even with the suspensions of Vilma and Will Smith, this division, I think, is going to be hard fought. It's always hard fought. I think the Saints can still win this division and get into the playoffs. I think 10-6 will actually be good enough to win this division this year. And people are like, well, what about the Falcons? Well, I'll tell you what, this is a big year for Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons. This team, they have to decide what they're going to be. Are they going to be a power running team, or are they going to throw it all over the yard with Roddy White and Julio Jones at the wide receiver positions? I don't know. Michael the Burner Turner has a lot of doesn't have much tread left on the tire, in my opinion. I like to think they have a big year this year. I'm just not sold on the Atlanta Falcons. I don't think they're a physical enough team. You saw in the playoffs last year when they played the now Super Bowl defending champion New York Football Giants, they got out-muscled and they got out-physicaled when it came down to getting a yard. They couldn't get the yard. And I tell you what, if you can't get a yard in the NFC South, you're not going to get into the playoffs. I think they end up with a nice record. I think they end up going 9-7, 10-6. But because of the tough division that the NFC is going to be this year, especially the NFC North and the NFC East, I think 10-6, if you don't win the division, is not going to be enough. And you're 10-6 looking on the outside of the playoffs in the NFC. Then you have the Carolina Panthers. Look, I don't think anybody's going to be surprised this year with Cam Newton. He was phenomenal last year in Rookie of the Year. Cam Newton proved to be a star. But can their defense stop anybody? That's going to be the big question. Now, they get John Beeson back at linebacker. Again, that's going to be a ton of help. He's unquestioned leader of that defense. But have they addressed the needs on defense to stop people. Yeah, I think they're going to put points up because you got Cam Newton, Steve Smith, and a slew of running backs and lots of weapons at tight end. I think they'll be able to put points up. But can they stop people when it counts? I think it's going to be an entertaining – when you watch Carolina games, it's going to be entertaining to watch them. I think they improved to 8-8 with, you know, I think 2-3 years from now. Definitely watch out for that Carolina team. Ron Rivera, who left San Diego to be in Carolina, he's going to build a winner there. And you know, nice start with Cam Newton. You know, and you get gifted Cam Newton, it's hard to go wrong, right? Then you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. New coach. 2 years ago, they were 10-6. Last year, the swashbuckler on the Buccaneers, they lost their sword. They fell apart at the end of the year, losing, I think, 8 in a row, 6 in a row, something like that. It was just dismal. They fired the coach, you know, got a new front office. They went and spent a bunch of money in free agency, which doesn't always work out to the best for the best for you. It really doesn't, spending that much money on free agency. They gave Vincent Jackson a boatload of money. I think they take a step forward this year. That's not really saying much. As awful as they were last year, Josh Freeman is really going to make some progress. He's really going to make some progress. I think getting Doug Martin at running back in the draft from Boise State, getting Vincent Jackson at wide receiver is going to make life a lot easier for Josh Freeman. But I still think, again, this division is going to be tough. Everybody's going to beat one another up. I think 7-9 is realistic, and for a first year coach on a young team is very promising. Now, one other thing I want to bring up tonight is that is Dwight Howard. And if you haven't heard yet, he's been traded. So finally, it's over. No more drama. Days of Dwight Howard are over. He's a Los Angeles Laker now. Andrew Bynum is now with the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And Andre Iguodala is leaving Philadelphia and is now with the Denver Nuggets. That is a great pickup for Denver. And the Magic, I'm sorry, in my opinion, the Magic dropped the ball on this. I think they could have got more. They ended up with a nice young player, Mo Harkless, who was number 15th pick in the draft in Philadelphia for Philadelphia this year. They get him, so they get, you know, a nice young player. But at that point, they get 3 first-round picks, which are more likely to be the back end of the first round. And then at that point, they get Aaron Afalo, who is owed over $30 million for the next 3 years, and an aging Howie Harrington, who's been in the league 12 years. I just think there are better offers out there. The Magic are going to be a lottery team next year. There's no doubt about that. Next year's NBA draft is not necessarily a strong draft by any means. I think you're looking at this team being one of the 2 or 3 worst teams, if not the worst team in the NBA. More on that next week. And also next week, we'll do our 4th week, which will be our final week. We'll look at the NFC and AFC West divisions. We'll also look at James Arizona Cardinals as well. Hey, and again, thanks to James from Broken Romeo. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully you enjoy the show tonight. I'll be back next week. And we have a band from San Diego, Divided by Design. So definitely check those guys out. You're really going to dig it. My name is Ryan. Seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so.